From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 651, Office 365 Governance with guest Martina Grom. Recorded Monday, July 22nd, 2019. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell. Thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Martina Grom, who works as an IT consultant, is the co-founder and CEO of Atwork Information Technology. Atwork is a software company and Microsoft partner located in Austria and is specialized in developing online solutions. Martina founded Atwork in 1999, has been working in IT since 1995. Welcome, Martina.
Yes, good evening, Richard, and thanks for the invitation. I'm happy to be there. And greetings from Austria.
Yeah, and we're all having a lovely summer, although I've heard it's really warm in Europe this year.
Yeah, it is. And we have kind of a heat wave, which began in June and lasted through the beginning of July. And the last 2 weeks were pretty nice, but now we are in the middle of the next heat wave period again.
You were one of the original Office 365 MVPs. There's many more now, but you were like right at the beginning of all of that.
Yeah, that's true. It was in January 2011, I got my first MVP award, and we were 8 people back then.
Wow.
And it was a very interesting and very, yeah, it was a very, very nice time being just 7 or 6 people at the MVP summit. So we were a very tiny group of people, and everybody says, yeah, this is just a service. We don't know what will happen in the future, but we have now some new MVPs. Okay. It's nice. So they will survive somehow. And you know, as you said, now there are a lot of Office 365 MVPs or, the MVP was, they were renamed in, I think it's the current name is Office Apps and Services MVPs.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot happened since then.
Yeah, no kidding. The product has changed dramatically. You know, once upon a time, it was just Office you got from the cloud. But it seems like all the new features now come to the cloud product more than they come to the on-prem product.
Yeah, and it was back then, it was already a promise by Microsoft that they said, okay, cloud first. But it wasn't true for all service within Office 365. But currently, it's just a way to go because it's really cloud first. And many of the services are just cloud only currently. And yeah, this is the way to go. In the moment.
What do you still have customers that are resisting Office 365, or are they only calling you once they're committed? Like, what is the pitch for or against Office 365?
So what I did in the last 10 years, because I started with Microsoft Cloud Services back in 2008, and it was a time where people said to me, Martina, you will never earn money with that because no one will ever go to the cloud. So you can do that because you are the owner of the company. It's your private money. You're investing there.
Right.
And currently, I'm working with very large enterprises in Europe, and I try to help them adopt and embrace the service and get the strategy towards cloud solutions and build up a secure cloud solution and a secure cloud environment and just skill them or give them the necessary skills to have knowledge around Microsoft 365 and how to handle that. And yes, there are still customers who are kind of, we don't need any cloud service. We are better off on premises. And there might be reasons for that as well. It could be a legal reason or it's public sector, whatever. But most of the reasons are things that you can discuss and you can ask, why do you think you are not allowed to go into a cloud service? And then very often you get a nice project out of those customers as well. And they say, okay, there's value if I do some things in the cloud mm-hmm. and if I prepare myself and all my users. And there is a lot of pressure for people also to look into cloud services and to use them.
Is it primarily a cost savings approach, or are there other aspects that are important?
It's for many customers in the beginning, it was a cost saving approach. Mm-hmm. But currently, it's more a value approach, that people learn that it's not necessary that they operate all the systems by themselves mm-hmm. and that they can get more value out of that if they just build their solutions on top of a running and existing service. And this is also the challenging part, because those customers need to go into kind of a change management project, kind of an adoption project. They need to learn how to handle an evergreen technology and also how to handle a technology which changes once a month, twice a month. It's not without notice. So Microsoft is very good in communication and announcing changes in the service, but it's just, for many people, it's still a little bit too fast.
Sure.
And that they get new.
I've certainly had issues and had done shows around the frustration that folks have had with the rate of change for Windows. But mm-hmm. have there been outages in Office 365? Have there been changes that really harmed anyone? I just never hear any stress around the updates to Office.
Yeah, and this is, if you look at the history of Office, the client installation package, there is a little bit of history between that, because if the time back when Microsoft had Office 2003 and then they moved to 2007, mm-hmm. there were a lot of changes yeah. and a lot of problems involved with that, and people just remember that. And very often they say, okay, if Microsoft changes something, I have no chance to roll anything back. How can I handle that? And I think this is also one of the most important things when you talk about cloud services. You do not go into a, I try that, and if it doesn't work, I roll everything back.
Right.
Microsoft can't roll back a huge update worldwide. So you always have to fix the things you are currently working on. And you have also, you need kind of a trust in that the updates don't break your system. And this is all part of the adoption process people have to go into. If they use Microsoft 365, they need to have trust in the services and they need to learn how to handle that.
But if it's updating monthly, the changes have got to be small.
Yes. So. And it's also important that you get a lot of security updates, which are necessary today.
Right.
And you don't get a brand new Office client every month. You get small changes in the service as well. And also, it's not only Office which is installed on your machine. Microsoft 365 is SharePoint Online. It's OneDrive for Business. It's Exchange Online. It's all the server systems. It's Microsoft Teams. So you get a lot of functionality with that.
Yeah, very, very powerful stuff. What do administrators need to do differently to take care of Office 365 compared to your traditional on-prem install of Office, SharePoint, etc.?
So from my perspective, the most important part is that an IT administrator needs to think outside of his traditional way of doing things. So if you are talking with an Exchange administrator, he knows very well how an Active Directory works, how a Windows Server System works, how Exchange Online works. But he doesn't know how SharePoint works, how OneDrive for Business works.
Right.
How every service interacts with each other. And I think this is very important, that you have people who can understand the whole service stack, and also that they know if they disable one service, it might impact other services within Microsoft 365 as well. And this is essential currently.
Just getting a grip on the effects of these different products and how they interact with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a non-trivial amount of training that the average IT person should take on for themselves to get going with Office 365. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that?
I think you need training for that. Mm-hmm. But I think the most important thing is you need practice. So very often people start with training and then they have no time to practice it and to use the software and the service. And then it gets difficult for them. And it's an ongoing process. You can't go into a training every week.
Sure.
So you need to be informed about, for instance, the Microsoft tech community. They publish everything which is new and which is part of your interest. You have a heavy message center within Microsoft 365 services where you can read everything which is new and comes to your tenant. So you need also read Twitter and see announcements and so on. So I think it's an ongoing learning process, which you're good if you like that and if you like the services in that.
Yeah, and you are getting some unique services in Office 365 you're not going to get elsewhere. I can't imagine, mm-hmm. is there any on-prem option for Teams, or do you have to have the cloud product for it?
So Microsoft Teams is born in the cloud and it's only available in Office 365.
Right. So that's a big one to learn right off the bat is this collaboration tool.
Yes. And Microsoft Teams, it's a two-part product. On one side, it's a lot towards voice over IP, web conferencing, and things like that. And the other part is all around collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes that product a fantastic product where people from both sides, from the traditional phone system side and the other people from the collaboration side, have a unique product where they can interact in, where they can work within, and so on. So it's a real game changer currently, Microsoft Teams, and people love that.
Yeah, just now, then I think about what are the governance issues there, because mm-hmm. You can create mm-hmm. a lot of groups and teams pretty fast and you can get out of control.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the fun part. I think I talk about governance for Microsoft 365 mm-hmm. now for 4 or more years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all around Office 365 groups and groups governance. And you have to discuss with your customers, do you want to have kind of a self-service so everyone is allowed to create teams?
Right.
Or do you need some controls behind that? Will you work with naming policies? What is an expiration policy? How do you work with classifications? Do you need sensitivity labels? And how will you deal guest access into Microsoft Teams, which is a huge part currently that people say, okay, I want to work within my organization, but I also need to include external people
mm-hmm.
where we work together and how to handle them. So it's a lot around governance.
Yeah, no question. I think, you know, it's funny looking at the list of Office 365 things and remembering when SharePoint was new and young before the cloud, and you had the same problem where people were just standing up SharePoint projects all over the place and you lost mm-hmm. control of them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Is that still an issue in 365? I would wonder if setting up SharePoint stuff's even easier now.
Setting up SharePoint online stuff it's much easier. And one fundamental part is it's very pretty. So the thing is with SharePoint, you can really build a very good looking intranet today
right.
with that. And this is also something that we all had to learn, that if you want your users to like the software you give them, it needs to look pretty.
Yeah, how it looks matters. Absolutely. The people are going to smile when they see it. The old default templates for SharePoint 2007 were not pretty.
Yeah.
Do you still see proliferation problems, or is SharePoint better managed now that people don't all try and stand up their own project?
I think it's largely depending on the organization sure. you're working with. So you can go and let people just do what they want to do and put a very basic governance behind that. Or you go into a big organization where you have people who set up everything for you and the user just orders what he wants and when he wants it and to get the final service delivered. So from an IT operation perspective.
And is it normal to allow self-service creation of projects, or do you limit that in some way, just team leads? Like what's the typical set of rules?
So the typical set of rules in the beginning is that you have some kind of restrictions mm-hmm. around self-service. So the first impression is, okay, we have to do that for our users.
Right.
And then when IT has or gains trust into the service and also into their users, they say, okay, they are fine to go. I can allow a certain set of users to do self-service. And very often when I talk with them, I said, yeah, the only thing you need to take care of that they use the right labeling.
Right.
There's an expiration policy in place. There's a policy in place that you have more than one owner in every team, and then just let them go. Because if something goes wrong, you can still fix it afterwards.
Right. As long as it's inside the organization's Office 365 account, we're always going to have a visibility as IT people of what the self-service people are doing.
Yeah.
It's not like the old days where they literally grabbed some CDs and just installed it on a machine underneath a desk and you had no idea until you found it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Better.
And very often when I start working with customers and they didn't have any governance in place, we do just a cleanup mm-hmm. and go through the services and say, okay, you're better off with that configuration and do this and that. And then we look how many groups or Microsoft Teams you have in your organization. And then you just check, do you need to change something or do you need to have more control behind that? And that works.
That's interesting.
Also after the fact.
And Martina, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message. Every year on Black Friday, you see the same sales on the same TVs and SSDs. This year, why not get your company to buy you something you actually want? At BrentOzar.com/Black Friday, you can sign up for early access to deep discounts on SQL Server and Azure SQL DB training. That's BrentOzar.com/Black Friday. And then maybe you can watch that training on your new TV. And we're back. It's Richard Campbell, Run As Radio, and I'm talking to Martina Grom about governance around Office 365. And yeah, I got to think the IT instinct first coming into Office 365 is we'll handle the provisioning. Certainly onboarding processes, anything like that. But to get to self-service, to get a little more confidence, I guess mostly it's, can I see what's going on, that they're not going crazy? Is that true? Is that how people normally react? Is like first they control it all, then it's mostly a monitoring the self-service process?
Yes. Yes. And also you can discuss that. And so for instance, last year at Ignite, we showed an example how you can put self-service in place mm-hmm. with a workflow where a user starts the workflow and says, okay, I need a Microsoft team. And then he starts an approval workflow, which is sent to his manager, and the manager approves or rejects this.
Right.
And this is kind of a self-service, and it's not IT operations included, and it works pretty well if you go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have, for instance, expiration policies in place, which is also very useful that you see, okay, people opened up Teams a lot of in the beginning because they don't know how to handle that.
Right.
And if they need Teams or channels or whatever, they will also learn that an expiration policy is a good thing, that you do not need Teams which are no longer in use. And all that gives people a lot of responsibility back. From a user perspective, and on the other side, from an IT perspective, you have you can still control it, right, kind of, and you can monitor that. So everything is fine if you go in that direction.
If, when you expire a team group like that, are you actually deleting it or does it go into an archive? Like if there's useful information there, is there some way to get it back?
So the current process, how it works with the group's expiration policy is the group expires or the Microsoft team expires and then it gets into a soft delete status for 30 days.
Okay.
So within that 30 days, the owner can restore it. And also before it gets deleted, the owner gets a notification, hey, your team will be deleted or do you need to extend the team? And you get that notification. I think you get it on the 30 day, the 15 days before it expires and 1 day before it expires.
Right.
So you get a lot of notifications around that.
And are those defaults adjustable if my organization wants to give more time or less time?
Yes, they are. And you can also exclude specific teams.
Right.
And last week, Microsoft announced that they will have expiration policies, which are based on usage of teams.
That was my next question, Martina. It's like, if it's still being used, it doesn't expire?
Yeah. So Microsoft is currently working on that. And they announced it in the tech community that they said, okay, we will have groups expiration or Microsoft Teams expiration based on usage. So that means if Microsoft sees or the service sees that the team is still in use, the expiration will not take place.
Right.
Currently, it's just a limit on days that they say, okay, every team needs to be confirmed after 180 days.
Right. That's not a bad policy either. I mean, if it's being used routinely, then leave it in place. It's just a question of, it's all these stray groups that are sort of orphaned that you want to, you know, make sure they get cleaned up over time.
Yeah, exactly. Orphaned groups or ownerless groups is also a big topic in that.
Yeah, you said very casually there, but I think it was a hugely important governance thing that there needs to be more than one leader to a group.
Yeah, exactly. So the basic recommendation is that you have at least two owners per team or per Office 365 group, because, you know, people are leaving or they go into another job role and so on, and they do not need the team anymore. So one thing is that you have at least two owners per group or per team. And if you have less than that, or if the team is ownerless, that you have an administrator who gets the notification that the group might expire.
Right. But I also got to think that's got to be part of an onboarding or offboarding or moving within an organization process to flag all of that stuff.
Yeah. And also you can have a nice process in place that you, for instance, check ownerless groups every day and then write to the other members of the group that to say, okay, this team doesn't have an owner. Who wants to be the new owner of that group and responsible for the people and guests in there?
Or should it be deleted?
Yeah. Or archived.
Just to have that, kick that conversation off and as automatically as possible. So we're not constantly shepherding all these things. What does Office 365 do as far as, you know, when you think back to the fundamentals, like Word, making sure that the average Word user inside of an organization is actually saving their files in the quote unquote right place, which for me started with SharePoint, helped a lot on that. Is that a stronger feature in Office 365? Is that something I can set good rules around?
Yes. Speaking about the Office client is, the thing I like about that, it's a click to run client. So you get constantly updated on the client experience. Then, for instance, what worked excellent on my machine, I moved from the 32-bit version to the 64-bit version just by changing the configuration file.
Right.
And it does everything by itself and it simply worked. So, and Microsoft changed also the recommendation for that to say, okay, go with the 64-bit version. And then also when I speak with customers and users, they really like the fact that they open up a Word document or a PowerPoint, an Excel sheet, they can do co-authoring, they can instantly save it to their SharePoint sites. It works like they are used to work in the past. And also they see that it's constantly saved. They do not lose data. If they forget to save it, they can just go home, close the lid, take the notebook with them, and everything works fine.
Right.
And also, if you work with a OneDrive client and you use Selective Sync on that, it's also an excellent service for people like me who are on the road a lot. I always have the files I need with me. And this is very important.
Very powerful. And this is OneDrive for business we're talking about as well, right?
Exactly. I'm just talking about the business versions of Office 365. Yeah.
Sure. I talk to IT folks that are scared about any of these SkyDrive type solutions just because they're afraid of somebody leaving, losing control of files, like those kinds of problems. Are they addressed in OneDrive for business?
Yeah. And that's an interesting part as well. So you have kind of when a user leaves an organization and he's offboarded from, his Active Directory account is deleted. It also gets into a soft deleted state for 30 days. And if you have a proper Active Directory structure and the manager field is filled for that specific user, the manager gets a notification. Okay, Martina left the company. Here's the link to her OneDrive files. Can you just check if there are any necessary files you might need in the future? And then the manager can go in there, copy the files, and preserve that from an organizational perspective.
These are all things I used to have to build. You know, file management alone, and when people went away and writes, and, you know, it was super challenging to not lose control of data. The fact that it's just built into Office 365 and you just have to, who pays attention to this? You know, who gets the email? That's all that is necessary.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, and what we did, so there's still space for building solutions around that. So for instance, you can also programmatically, when a user leaves the organization and he had a lot of files on his OneDrive for Business account, and this account was shared with a lot of guests or other people in the organization, you can just go in there and programmatically through the Office Graph or the Microsoft Graph, you can query that and get a list of people who had access to the files of the user. And you can build a solution like notifying them, and give them a heads up that the file might be deleted in 30 days and needs to be copied to another place and so on. So there is still a lot of space for custom development in that. And this is also a very nice solution for everyone who works in development as well.
Mm-hmm. You specifically in developing software.
Yeah.
You just make sure you have you always have access to those things. So you don't. Yeah. I feel like this is a no-brainer from a governance perspective. It's like you've got so much of this governance built into Office 365 that you either haven't built for yourself yet or you have and have to maintain, that this seems like less work in the end.
Yeah. That's true. But also what I learned is, every enterprise has different needs.
Okay.
So, for instance, in Europe, we have GDPR, which we talk a lot about privacy and protecting users and so on. So it could be the case that an organization doesn't want the manager to get access to the file of his team member afterwards. Oh. And then you are in a discussion about, okay, what happens if the user leaves the company and how could you make sure that organizational data is still within the organization?
Yeah. So I would think that if it's a file share provided by the organization for your work, that ultimately the organization is responsible for everything in that file share.
Yes, but what happens if the user uses OneDrive for Business also for his personal files, like a home drive?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a misuse of company property, theoretically, but I guess he still is deserving of privacy.
Yeah, and it could be interpreted in every way. And a lot of organizations say, okay, OneDrive is your personal storage. Mm-hmm. You can use it for every file you need. So it could go either direction, depending on the organization.
Yeah, now you throw in a circumstance like a sexual harassment case where the files might be relevant to that, and then maybe they're personal, maybe they aren't. But I think as organizations, we're also responsible for providing whatever information is required. So, yeah. There's no easy answers here, is there?
There is, and this is also something that I had to learn, is there's no right or wrong. Mm-hmm. It's just something which needs to fit to the organization and how the enterprise works. And also the second part is the enterprise needs to adopt around the service a little bit. And this is also something that I learned through Microsoft 365. It brought a lot of change into organizations just out of the service orientation. It's providing a lot of change, a lot of new things. People have to learn how to handle evergreen technologies. And they also had to learn how to move forward and not doing update every 3 years.
Right.
And then
it's a very significant change, but it sounds like ultimately it's lower friction. I also think we put off a lot of self-service stuff when we have to roll it ourselves. We could take on self-service if there's just automation that's already available to us.
Yeah.
Are there other aspects of Office 365 that you find have governance issues? Like, we've talked about OneDrive and SharePoint and Teams as, to me, seem like the obvious ones. But there's so many other products in here. Do you see other friction points?
So what I see currently is around of data classification.
Data classification.
What I learned in the past is data classification and things like litigation hold, e-discovery, and so on are very popular and well known in the US. But in Europe, or with many customers I work with, they are just in the beginning of about thinking about data classification. Mm-hmm. So organizations also need to learn, what content do I have and which of that needs to be classified as confidential.
Right.
And when it's confidential content, do I need to encrypt it, or do I need to have separate protection technologies behind that? And that's the interesting part, how to handle that data classification issues.
I think there'll be retention policies that vary too based on classification and sensitivity.
Yeah, exactly. So you can put in retention policies or, for instance, also data loss prevention policies are very helpful, that you say, okay, if a user shares data which contains a specific whatever credit card information or anything else, the file will be encrypted or it couldn't be shared externally. And if you go with retention policies, you can say, okay, this is contractual data and nobody is allowed to delete it because we need to keep those files for at least 10 years.
Right.
And after 10 years, it will be deleted.
Well, and I think it's also important to delete things when they should be deleted based on the law too, because it represents legal risk. If you continue to retain stuff you're not legally required to.
That's very true. And I always talk with my customers about that, but very often it's also kind of scary for people to let a system out to delete your files.
Yes. Yeah. It sort of goes against everything you've ever learned as an IT person.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's also kind of losing control about that.
Yeah.
So a machine is deleting my files. Do I want that? So, yeah.
Interesting.
It's true.
Martina, it's so fun to chat with you on this. You've really got me thinking about how I want to do things differently too. It's not a small problem, but at the same time, I think it's easy to think in terms of Office 365 introduces complexity, but I think it's actually simplifying a bunch of stuff we work really hard to do on our own as IT pros.
Exactly. And you should also think about the service like something. It's a very standardized service, and you just use that and build your solutions on top of that. And this is why you get the most benefit out of that. Also, when you talk about security or think about security, it's very hard to build the same level of security in an on-premises system. like you have it within Microsoft 365 today.
Absolutely. Martina Graham, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation and happy to chat again.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.